Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Cindy Chavez here. Today is Wednesday, July the 4th, 2018, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, your daily dose of happy for the day. And I want to wish everybody here in the United States happy 4th of July, the birthday of America. Lots of partying going to be going on today, lots of beach time, lots of mountain climbing, lots of families at barbecues, lots of all kinds of stuff going on. And so we hope that you're going to enjoy your day wherever you are and whatever it is you're going to be doing. And it's been a good thing for us to get up and get our energy going today. I don't know if I told you, Cindy. I don't think I did. Wendy decided she didn't really feel up to doing the afternoon. She wanted to have the day off. And I said, yeah, that's fine. That's great. So we are the Daily Dose of Happy today. It's up to us.
Oh,
the pressure is on.
It's on us. What? We can do it. I have confidence in
I have confidence too. Yeah.
And it's funny when you were naming all the things, you know, yesterday you had mentioned the 4th of July and you said fireworks. And I was like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that. I forgot all about fireworks.
That's
and
right.
Now when you were listing everything, I'm thinking to myself, I think we've got rain, and I wonder if that cancels a fireworks display if there's rain, you know? So whatever we're going to do, we're just going to make the intention to be happy today and have a good time.
Absolutely, yeah. And fireworks can also be postponed until there's a good day for them, so they don't have to happen on the 4th. I don't think I can even say the last time I saw fireworks on the 4th. Because usually around here, most of the towns do it, you know, like a couple days before, a couple days afterward, on the weekend, you know, that kind of thing. I don't think anybody does it on the 4th around here anymore.
Well, that's kind of a good point, too. You know, it's that Wednesday holiday.
Yes.
It's like, you know, oh. It's like when you work for yourself, you know, you can take off, make it a long weekend still. But I know there's a lot of people we were talking to. A waitress that we have a lot when we go to breakfast, and she was saying that they were taking off Wednesday and coming back to work on Thursday. And she said, I'd really rather just, you know, wish we were just staying open. It was kind of funny. It's like kind of breaks the week up.
Well, it does give new meaning to the term hump day. I mean, usually hump day is a work day. This week, hump day is actually just a relaxation day.
Yeah. So I don't mind it. Because I'm taking an extra long break. But whatever we do, it's always a good intention to just decide it's going to be a good day, whatever's going on.
Yeah.
Whether you're off, whether you're working, whether you're going to a big celebration or not, whatever, just intend on making the best day of it. And I have a question for you, because this came up yesterday in a conversation with somebody. And I just sort of like off the cuff just like said, well, this is the way I view it. And then I said a bunch of stuff that was like, oh, wow, that was okay. You know, it's like I didn't plan it out beforehand and I'd never thought about it before. But the difference between an intention and a goal, do you see those two things as different? Because I see them as different. I see a goal as being, I think, a little more quantifiable. Like a goal for me might be something that, well, it's quantifiable. It's a number, or it's I'm going to do X, or I'm going to do X, you know, Y, Z, you know, I'm going to do this so many times. I'm going to make a certain amount of money. I want to get, you know, this closet clean today, whatever. It's sort of like something that's very concrete, where an intention with me, when I set intentions, a lot of times it's much more pointed at maybe emotional things, or it's like, I'm going to intend to make the best of this. I'm going to intend to have a really positive attitude about this thing, or I'm going, you know, my intention is to learn as much as I can today, or my intention is to think of, you know, a way to create a certain, usually it's just a certain emotion or feeling for me when I make intentions. And it got me really curious about how other people see those two things.
Well, I think that's valid. I think you have a good, valid distinction there, and it works. And you create a very clear delineation between them. So yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's also another way to look at it, which is I think I could argue that intentions can be quantifiable. In that, you know, I set an intention every day, so I have a daily intention. Well, that's something I can count. I did how many days that I set the intention. I also think that with an intention versus a goal is a landing place. An intention is how I get there.
Right. Yes. Perfect. Exactly. That is really, that's it in a nutshell, I think, is that a goal happens when I finally get there.
Yes, exactly.
Sometimes it's finally, you know, the topic came up when someone was discussing with me like 5-year goals, and you know, they also brought up my way of creating intentions. And I said, well, I see them as two completely different things. And you're right. It's like, I make intentions constantly, and intentions for me anyway, have a lot more to do with the journey than the destination. And so the reason why I brought it up today is because we talk so much about being intentional,
mm-hmm.
right? When we're consciously creating. And we also talk about goals. And so I thought, if one person can get that confused or not understand that there's a difference, then there may be someone else. And I wanted to hear your viewpoint on it. And I love that. That is exactly right.
Yeah. Well, you know where I think about it the most? I think about it in sports. I mean, like, for instance, football, European football or soccer, as we call it.
A literal goal.
It's literally a goal, right? And you're trying to score a goal. And people think about the goal scoring as the most important part of the game, because that's how you decide which team won, who had the most goals. And that makes sense. Except for one thing. You can't score the goal until you get the ball downfield past the defenders. And that's where all the game gets played. So you're constantly working with intention of, you know, I want to try to move the ball here. My teammates are going to move it here. You're constantly working as a team to finally get to the point where you can actually score the goal. So most of the game is not about scoring the goal. Most of the game is about trying to get into the right position to score the goal.
And it makes total sense, you know, when you think about most scores of a soccer game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah,
it's not like baseball. It's not like baseball where one swing of the bat can win the thing, right? It's not like, you know, the player, the offensive player can be at the other end of the field and kick this long kick and it goes in the goal without the goalie stopping it. That just doesn't happen in soccer.
Right.
But in baseball, I mean, and I'm not belittling baseball. It's actually one of my favorite sports because it's the hardest thing to do is to hit a baseball. But if you hit a home run, you're done. You can win 1-0 right there.
Yeah,
you can do it with
really
one swing of the bat.
Because I like that metaphor or that analogy, actually, because thinking about it, if all you were thinking about was the goal,
yeah,
you know, it's having the intention bit by bit. Like you were talking about moving the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, but it's not just one movement. It's most of the game, right? Move, 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 move. And so with us, when we're, you know, we've been talking about this week, we've been talking about well-being. And I think I told the story before, but 20 years ago or so, I had a pretty serious health crisis and I was trying to get better. And it was a very slow slog to get better, but I was getting better. And then, you know, I'd have a bunch of good days. And I actually went in to see my chiropractor, who was also a nutritionist, who was helping me. And I was just really in a sad mood that day because I had had like 4 or 5 good, really good days in a row. And I was so excited because I was like, okay, I'm doing it. I am getting better. I am getting well. And then the day before my appointment or the day of my appointment, I can't remember, it's been a long time, but I had a really hard day.
Mm.
And I thought, I was getting better. I was so discouraged. And the chiropractor took out a sheet of paper and he drew a little dot in the bottom left-hand corner. And then he drew a dot in the top right-hand corner, if you can picture that. And he said, see, here's where you started, way down here, feeling really bad. And here's where you want to go, way up here. And he said, and most people want to see progress like this. And he just drew a line from down there to the top. Whoop.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, but that's never how healing happens. It happens like this. And he drew this jagged line, like a stock market line, you know, up, down, up, down, up, down. But overall, it was going up. And he said, you know, you're going to have days that aren't as good as other days. It doesn't mean you're not getting better. And that like changed my perspective, not just on health, but on so many things, to realize, okay, like this doesn't mean like that I'm going backwards. It just means that I had a day that wasn't so great.
Exactly.
And so that's that moving the ball down the field. You know, it's like you gain ground, you gain ground, you gain ground, lose a little bit of ground. But that's okay. It's like, so the intention has to just, the intention has to be constant and just keep being present with what is right now. And how do we make it better? And how do we move forward a little bit? And that's the intention. And then we get to the goal.
Yep. Yeah, I used to get all worked up and upset about politics, and I am proud to say I have almost completely eliminated that from my repertoire.
I'm very proud of you, Walt.
I mean, seriously, I was really, really deeply entrenched in it. And one of the things I noticed while I was deeply entrenched is actually one of the things that helped me to decide I really wanted to leave the whole thing behind is I don't remember which administration it was. But I remember there was a time where there was a slight dip in the economy. And by slight, I mean, using the same graph analogy you just described, imagine an almost perfect upward going graph, except about two or thirds of the way up, there's this little dip down, you know, for like a quarter of an inch, and then it takes off again going up. And for that one quarter of an inch, the opposition is saying, oh my God, we're in recession.
Yeah.
You know, there's this gigantic thing going on here with one little blip in it, and oh, this is terrible. But that's what politics is about. Politics is about finding the worst thing to say about any given situation so you can get votes, which is really strange. But nevertheless, that's how that particular game is played. The goal, talk about goals and intentions. The goal in politics is to make the other guy look bad, and your intention is to always find ways to ensure that happens.
It's really unfortunate.
It's amazing,
right?
It's really a statement of just how fear-based the whole thing is. The whole thing is about just terrifying people.
And when you think about that, like anyone that was living with that template,
yes,
for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, going to the doctor and having the doctor's goal to be to tell you the worst thing possible.
Yes, right.
having any expert, you know, have their goal to be to tell you the worst thing possible. It's not going to fly. And especially in our business, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we want to tell you the best thing possible. And what a different just naming those two things. You know, the worst case scenario,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting because one of the things that happens or can happen with a big effect actually in coaching is to figure out the worst case scenario. Because a lot of times that's what keeps us from making a big change in our life is we're focused on the worst case scenario until we don't make the change. And sometimes if we can figure out what we actually think that is and we realize, yeah, I'd still be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Right?
Exactly.
But it's never my intention or goal to go there. Right. I don't go there first off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to tell you the worst part of the story, or the absolute worst thing that could possibly happen. Terrifying people isn't my... That's not my MO for coaching.
But, I hope not.
But it's interesting to think about. I mean, I'm glad. Okay. Well, thank you for chiming in about goals and intentions.
Oh, you're welcome.
I think it's important and it helps me because we talked about, and it's funny, the word intending is actually in there. We talked about a tool at the beginning of this book when we first started out months ago, which is segment intending. And that's sort of the perfect example because it's just making an intention for the just next little bit of the trip.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like when you're taking a road trip and you look at the map and you know, okay, here's our next stop. And all through our day, we have those moments of this is the next thing I'm going to do. This is the next segment. And if we can make intentions segment by segment, we get to the goal, at least in a happier way, I think.
Well, I think, well, not only in a happier way, in a more successful way. I mean, all this is reminding me of a comic, a very old comic strip that was published starting around World War II, and I think it carried into around the 70s. It was called Sad Sack.
Oh, yeah. I remember that comic.
You remember Sad Sack? Yeah.
I'm dating myself.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I was like 1 year old. I could read.
Well, you were a very what's the word I'm looking for? It begins with P, and I can't think of what the word is. You were very advanced for your age.
Yes.
You were a prodigy. There you go. Yes. You were a prodigy. You were able to read at 1 year old. That was really good. But anyway, Sad Sack was a story about a soldier in the military who basically had all these terrible things happen to him. And not only that, he was inept. He was inept and he was a bad soldier. And he was just an inept person, just couldn't do anything right. He was like the classic guy with the rain cloud over his head as he walks around.
Right.
Everything went wrong with him. And I think about that, and I'm not sure precisely what the creator of the strip was trying to portray. I wasn't sure if he was trying to portray the craziness of being depressed all the time, or if he was just trying to diss the military. It could have been either one. But the point is, this guy never won. Everything went wrong for him all the time.
Right.
Continuously.
Yeah, that's funny. As you were talking about it, I was remembering it, and I was thinking to myself, because, you know, I wasn't really 1 year old, but I was I was a kid, and I was like, you know, at the time, I don't think I ever would have had the thought of what was the inspiration behind the idea.
Right.
And now I'm thinking, huh, what was the inspiration behind the idea? Was the guy just pointing out, like, this is what your life is going to be like if you're always focused on the negative? Maybe he was an early, you know, conscious creator. Maybe he belonged to a new thought.
Or maybe he was an unconscious creator. Maybe he didn't realize what he was creating, but he just found this theme and stuck with it.
It's so funny.
Wow. It could have gone either way. All I know is that Sad Sack lasted for a number of years and had a lot of loyal readers.
It did. I mean, I remember it being one of the comics that was in all the papers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that's the first thing I looked at as a kid was the comics. And on the weekend, they were huge pages and they were in color. It was exciting.
It was exciting. But did you have the same experience that I did, that you'd get so excited about reading the comics every time, but when you read them, they weren't that good?
Well, sometimes they were. And then sometimes, and I even remember, because my dad and I would like share the comics. Did you read the comics yet? Hear the comics, right? And I remember, you know, a time or two of, yeah, they're not that funny today.
Yeah. I remember.
It was just.
I mean, usually there were like one or two out of an entire 2 pages of comics that were funny. And the rest of them were just, yeah.
But the comics, you know, the comics are kind of like, they played a big part in my life growing up. And even after I was an adult and still got the paper every day, I was a big fan of Gary Larson's Far Side.
Oh, I love Gary Larson's
and
stuff.
It's really funny because when I moved from, you know, the West Coast here, the paper that I got didn't have the Far Side. And everything was so different. You know, I really had culture shock at first. And so I needed some things that seemed familiar. And oh my goodness, what was I going to do without the Far Side every day? So
right.
I subscribed to the Houston Chronicle, which is another state away, but because it was the closest paper that had the Far Side, and I still crack up when I think about it. But I have been to so many places. I was using someone's office, and the actual owner of the office came in and said, could you reach in that drawer and see if there's a stapler in there or something, you know? And I opened the drawer and there's a Far Side cut out, like shoved in the back of the drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And I find them in the weirdest places. It's like, they were so funny that people would actually clip them out and save them. And I've been at more than one place and seen one like on a refrigerator or a bulletin board or shoved in a drawer. And I think, wow, like, it was kind of universal that he was well loved.
The Far Side is the only comic that I wanted to have the books that got published. You know, because you can get books of the various comic strips. That one I wanted the books because they were almost all funny. That's what was so
amazing.
They
were all funny. I actually have the books, and I have Calvin and Hobbes too. They were both my sweet spot. So funny, funny.
Actually, anyway. My favorite cartoon of all time is a Gary Larson, and it has a terrific Law of Attraction theme to it. It's a picture of a guy in hell. And you see him in the middle of the picture. He's sweeping the ground. It's not even a floor. It's sweeping dirt. And there's, you know, fire all around him. And there's two devils up on a platform. You can tell that they're like overseers or supervisors or whatever. And one of them turns to the other and says, I don't think we're getting through to him because he's whistling. as he's sweeping.
He's happy.
And I'm thinking, well, there's a great example of no matter how bad your circumstances, finding a way to feel good anyway.
Right? That's funny. See, my favorite one is not quite that that law of attraction. I don't think it's a woman fixing the food for her three little poodles, and they're standing down there, and one saying to the other one, "Well, yes, you are right. Once we kill her, the pampering will end."
That's cute.
It's like, oh my gosh, where does he come up with these things?
I don't know. He came up with some bizarre stuff. Just incredibly funny. Crazy, funny, weird, bizarre, wild stuff.
Well, and sometimes we come up with some bizarre stuff and crazy and wild, and hopefully it makes you smile and laugh. And
it makes me smile and laugh. You can hear it on the show.
Yeah. So I want to take a minute to remind you, if you're a new listener and you haven't subscribed yet, we would love for you to subscribe to our podcast. That way you get the podcast coming right to your device every day and you won't miss any of them, right?
Absolutely.
How do they do it, Walt?
Very simple. This is like the easiest thing you're going to do all day. You go to the homepage at loatoday.net and you follow the instructions for 1 minute. That's it. End of it. That's all you have to do.
Excellent. See how easy that was?
Painless. Very simple.
And then after you subscribe, you can hit one of those social media buttons, whichever place you like to hang out, and let your friends know that you're a subscriber. And then you can, if you want to, we'd love you to reach out, say hello.
Oh,
tell us what tell us what you're enjoying about the podcast and how it has affected your life. I got a message a couple of days ago, last weekend, sort of out of the blue, because I didn't expect it. It was on Instagram, and it was in a thread that wasn't a law of attraction thread. It was just, I had commented somewhere, and someone in the thread recognized me and commented back and said, the podcast that you do with Walt Thiessen is really making a big impact on my life. And that is the goal. And so that made my day to hear it, of course. So,
oh yeah, me too. Especially when you told me about it, that made my day. So it had an echo effect, right? It made your day, then it made it my day. And now we're making the day of listeners. I mean, this is like going on and on. This is good.
Right. Right. It keeps going. So.
It does.
All right. Well, we have been making our way through the book Money and the Law of Attraction, which I think is very attractive to many people because money is such a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And it really is. We live in a world where you pretty much need money for anything. And so Money and the Law of Attraction seemed like a really good place to start.
I have this weird thought. There's an old Monty Python song about money, and it's going through my head right now.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful. Anytime Monty Python is going through your head.
I've got 90,000 pounds in my pajamas. I've got 40,000 French francs in my bridge. I mean, just, where? I don't know where that came from.
Hey, well, you know what? What's really great about that is I was thinking about listeners that have been with us for a while and with us through the Money and Law of Attraction book will remember my experiment of taking I didn't have a set of prayer beads at the time. So I grabbed a set of Mardi Gras beads because, you know, I live here in Mardi Gras land. And I decided to use them for repeating a mantra or an affirmation. And the one I chose was, I feel rich.
That's right.
I feel rich. I feel rich. I feel rich. And I decided to do it 1,000 repetitions a day for 10 days in a row. And I've just been thinking about it the last day or so. I'm going to pick that up again because it really was a wild ride for those 10 days and all kinds of great stuff came our way. Really incredible stuff, not just money flowing in, but just rich things. It was really fun. But that song, Walt, kind of fits that.
It does.
How could you not sing that song? And how could you sing that song and not feel rich, right?
It really does have that kind of feel to it. That I often wonder why we miss stuff like that. But there are a lot of people around the world who are Monty Python fans who know that song. Do they sing it to themselves? Do they sing it as a way to help themselves feel rich? No. But they know it.
Well, I'm going to now. I won't be able to not do it. See that double negative?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to do it. So we've been working our way through the book, and we've gone through the sections where we dealt with tools to use. We learned the pivot, which has been monumental. And we've talked about relationships and we've talked about money. And now we're actually getting ready to finish up the section on well-being and illness. That's the topic today, is talking about what is the chief cause of illness.
Yeah, and Jerry's actually been asking a series of questions along the lines of health and illness and people getting sick and people struggling to get well and all this other stuff. And it's like I mentioned yesterday, once he's like a dog with a bone. Once he gets a hold of it, he doesn't want to let go. He wants to explore every aspect of this thing. So he's finishing that up right now. He's gone through like five or six of them that we went through over the last day or two. And now we're going to summarize. You know, now that we've covered it all, we've really, you know, beaten it to a pulp. Now we're going to summarize it. So, so Jerry's asking, so in simple terms, what do you see as the chief cause of illness?
And Abraham says, illness is caused by giving thought to unwanted topics, feeling negative emotion, but ignoring it. And continuing to focus upon unwanted, such that negative emotion is getting greater, but still ignoring it. And maintaining attention upon unwanted until, by the law of attraction, still more negative thoughts and experiences are attracted. And this sentence is italicized. Illness exists when you disregard the early subtle signs of misalignment that come in the form of emotion. Wow, wow, wow. This paragraph is amazingly powerful. It kind of took me by surprise. But illness is caused by giving thought to unwanted topics. Mm-hmm. I think that's really powerful. Yeah. We talked in the beginning of this section of the book on well-being.
Right.
One of the things we talked about a lot was the idea that we might be complaining about aches and pains, complaining about symptoms, but that's not where it started, that it often starts when we're complaining about other things. While our body is still feeling good, but we're complaining, and eventually that those complaints lead to us feeling poorly physically. And then, of course, we're complaining about being sick. But I think this is so interesting. Illness is caused by giving thought to unwanted topics, feeling negative emotion, but ignoring it. I'm really happy to see that be brought up, because that's one of my soapboxes, right? Is so often people, and especially this, you know, I kind of want to go, don't let this happen to you.
Yeah, right.
If you're learning about law of attraction and you're finding groups of people that practice law of attraction and you're hanging out with people that, I mean, that's all good. We want to do that. We want to find other people that get it, because people that are also consciously creating things can be a big support to us when we're learning these tools and ideas. And yet sometimes there's this underlying current of it's wrong to feel something other than happy. And so sometimes people will be involved in a group and they'll be having something going on in their life, and they'll be feeling bad about it, feeling down about it, feeling unhappy. And they're all generally emotions that we're not real crazy about. And then on top of all of that, they feel like it's wrong to feel those things, so they ignore those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
They put on a happy face. And believe me, I'm raising my hand over here. I did this for years, so I know firsthand. I was a pro. I should have gotten an Oscar. Like, I was a pro at putting a happy face on and, you know, the whole fake it till you make it. We've talked about this before. This is not what that's talking about.
That's right.
It doesn't mean pretend that you're liking what's going on. You know, one of the law of attraction masters in the world, who's also a good friend of mine, Jeanette Ma, one time, well, it was 2.5 years ago when my little Maltese dog that I'd had for years passed. And I was devastated. Mm. And it was awful. And after, you know, a day or so, I was expecting myself to just be right back to my old self, just pop right back and be happy and I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And she asked me how I was doing. And I said, I'm not doing so good. I'm really trying, but I just have not popped back. Like, I'm just not popping back. And she said, girlfriend, you just lost your little dog. This is not a time to pop back. This is a time to let your heart break a little bit. It was like really the best thing anybody ever said to me.
Mm.
Because suddenly I had permission,
yeah,
to really feel it, to really acknowledge it, to really be okay that my heart was broken. And I really did. And you know what? Once I did that, I was on the path to healing up my broken heart about my loss. Grief takes time. But if I would have just...
That's really what yeah. it is. It takes relief.
Yeah. And, you know, I like to think about the word emotion. And I'm not this, I didn't invent this. Someone else did. I read it somewhere. But that E, we talk about like E squared. E is energy, right? E, motion. Emotions are, it's energy in motion. Emotions need to move. And they do move. Think about how many times on the show that we laugh together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Laughter is energy moving in the body, right?
Yep.
Same with crying. Like, emotions need to move. And so it's really important that we don't ignore them. And it needs to be okay. I'm constantly giving permission to people to feel uncomfortable emotions. Because if we can acknowledge them and feel them, then they can move through us and we can find a better feeling thought. Shoving them down, even Abraham's agreeing here, right? Ignoring them, it's going to make us sick.
There's also a really good clue in here for those who are looking, and I think we all do look in one degree or another, to those who are looking for indications of proof, indications of evidence that the law of attraction really works the way that we think it works. The message that I'm reading here is everyone who is focusing and giving a lot of thought to unwanted topics, feeling negative emotion, but ignoring it, continuing to focus upon unwanted negative emotion and just, I call it living there. Everyone who does that is setting themselves up for illness. Well, how many people in our society express things negatively? You and I talked about that yesterday. Almost everybody does to one extent or another.
Mm-hmm.
How much evidence is there of illness in our society? Lots of it.
Right.
Conclusion? Correlation. Now, there are going to be people who will reasonably say, well, you know, causation and correlation are not necessarily the same thing. Okay, I get that. That's fine. I've seen enough correlation that makes me believe there is a cause going on here. But nevertheless, the correlation is unavoidable. I mean, it's there. It's right in our faces. So, you know, law of attraction at this point is something where no one can really prove it to you yet. You can only prove it to yourself. Mm-hmm. I think the day is going to come where there's going to be scientific proof for it. And I think it's going to happen this century. But nevertheless, we aren't there yet. So you have to decide, do you believe that this is true? Do you believe that there is sufficient correlative evidence to suggest to you that, yep, I'm willing to buy into the idea that this is true? For me, this is great evidence. This is just really, really powerful evidence. Of course, illness is caused by negative thoughts. Look how much of a prevalence there is of both. To say that there's no connection, to say that one doesn't lead to the other, I think is... You want to talk about burying your head in the sand? There's burying your head in the sand.
Well, and this is so clear. Illness exists when you disregard the early subtle signs of misalignment that come in the form of emotion. And how do we know what kind of emotions do we have when we're out of alignment?
Mm-hmm.
The uncomfortable ones.
Yeah.
And so...
Isn't that funny? You never have a whole stream of positive emotions when you're out of alignment, and when you're in alignment, you don't generally have a whole stream of negative emotions. Isn't that funny how that works?
If you do, you know you've just fallen out of alignment.
Exactly. Yeah, you're no longer in alignment.
So it says, if you feel negative emotion, and you do not change the thought to relieve the discomfort of the negative emotion, it always gets bigger. Until eventually the negative emotion becomes physical sensation and then physical deterioration. However, the illness is only an indication of your vibration. And whenever you change your vibration, the indicator will change to match the new vibration. Illness is nothing more than a physical indicator of energy out of balance. Now, I want to back up that part of the sentence that says, you know, when you, that illness is an indication of your vibration. And whenever you change your vibration, the indicator will change. Mm. Sometimes our earliest indication isn't illness, it's our feelings.
Yeah. I would say not even sometimes. I'd say it's probably true all the time. The question is, are we paying attention?
Well, what's interesting is that, and I have not thought about this before, I talked about the health crisis that I had. And I've often wondered, like, what caused that? Because I was a very positive person.
Hmm.
But now I'm saying, it was the thing I just talked about. It was that I was so good at just pasting a smile over it.
Ah.
So there were some things going on in my life that were creating some not so comfortable emotions that I was ignoring.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow. Okay.
So easy to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So easy to do. All right. So many people who are experiencing illness disagree with our explanation of the cause of their illness being that the law of attraction is responding to their thoughts, as they protest that they have never thought about that particular illness. But illness does not occur because you're thinking about that illness or about any illness. Illness is an exaggerated indicator of negative thoughts that began as a subtle indicator of negative emotion and grew larger as the negative thoughts persisted. Negative thought is resistance, no matter the subject of the negative thought. That's the reason that new diseases continue to come about. And until the actual cause of the disease is addressed, there will never be a final cure. You have potential for every illness in your body right now. And you have potential for a perfect state of health in your body right now. And you will solicit one or the other or a mixture depending upon your balance of thought.
Can I triple underline that one little phrase, or a mixture?
Yeah. I think it's always a mixture, right?
Well,
I mean,
much.
Remember we were talking about your opportunity to continually pivot the weekend that your knee was really flaring up?
Right, yep.
But your other knee, you were like, I would focus on my other knee because there was no pain in my other
That's
knee.
Right.
It's like, there's the mixture, right? It's
yeah.
like right now I can, you know, probably everyone has had, you know, some kind of little niggling health thing. Maybe you get a headache once in a while. Maybe, you know, people that type a lot or work on the computer will have like muscle, carpal tunnel kind of, you know, little minor things. But overall, you know, we can say we're in good health. I'm in good health.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in great health. But I can see the mixture. I can see that there's a mixture there. And I love knowing that it has nothing to do with me focusing on a specific illness.
Yes.
It has to do with me focusing on unwanted topics or ignoring negative emotions. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's so powerful.
And for me, this is where I like my phrase, where do you live? The real question isn't whether or not you think a thought at any given time. The real question is, how long are you thinking it? How often do you think about it? How much energy do you put into it over the course of hours, days, weeks, and months? I mean, if you have one
right.
thought one time about cancer, and then you spend the next 4 months thinking about everything but cancer, and most of the everything that you think about is positively related, guess what? Cancer's not in your forecast. On the other hand, if you don't think about cancer at all, but all you think about is all these terrible things going on, and these poor people being sick, and the hospitals filling up, and it's just an ongoing thing, you're going to get sick, and there's a decent chance it'll be cancer when you're done.
Well, I think that, you know, the idea of complaining about things all the time, the idea about focusing, like you said, where do you live?
Where do you live?
it's that constant stream of complaining about focusing on things that are not wanted. And then the other part, you know, it's okay to say this and that is going on and I don't like it at all. I don't feel good when I'm thinking about these things. What's the solution to this? I'll feel better if we can come up with a solution and reach for the better feeling things.
And thank goodness we can actually be allowed through this understanding to focus for short periods of time on the negatives so we can understand what it is we're learning from them. Like you said, you can't actually get past an emotion unless you allow yourself to feel it, even if it's a negative emotion. But yeah. The difference here is that you just don't want to stay with that emotion for the next 10 weeks. you can experience it now and you can get past it, you know?
We don't want to live there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about where we're choosing to live. And that was probably the biggest epiphany for me, where my whole journey with understanding the law of attraction is concerned, coming to recognize that I could shift my predominant emotional set point. Well, first of all, I came to the realization that there's no such thing as a set point. It bounces around so much that calling it a set point is ridiculous. But there is kind of like an average. You know, there's an average range that we follow.
A range.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't have to be stuck in a range. I actually get to choose what my range is going to be based on how I think. And I don't have to worry about when I slip up. Because I do slip up. What I try to focus on more is, can I find more times where I am focusing on where I wanted to focus? Hooray, I got there. I did it. Ooh, I did it again. Oh, I did it again.
Well, and this is the pivot, right?
Yeah.
The pivot is, instead of living in that place where your focus is on things that you don't want, or instead of living in that place where you're enduring things you don't want and pasting a smile over and acting like everything's okay, ignoring your true feeling of I'm not liking this at all.
On an ongoing basis.
Instead of living there, it's the pivot of, okay, I don't like this at all. This is not what I want. What do I want? What would be better?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want? And what would that give me to have that? Why do I want that? And go down that rabbit trail, right?
Yeah, that's a good rabbit trail.
Yeah. Follow that rabbit.
Yeah. Follow that rabbit.
So Jerry still has his bone.
Oh, yes. He doesn't let go easily. So he says, in other words, from your perspective, there is no physical cause for illness or disease. I mean, it's all thought.
And Abraham says, we understand your urge to give credence to action or behavior in attempting to explain causes. As you explain where your water comes from, you would be accurate to point to the faucet as the source of the water coming into your kitchen sink. But there is much more to the story of where the water comes from than only the faucet. And in like manner, there is much more to the story about the source of wellness or of illness. Your ease or dis-ease are symptoms of the balance of your thought, and that balance will manifest through the path of least resistance as surely as water flows downhill.
I like that phrase. I've really come to appreciate it a lot, particularly from doing these podcasts with you and Wendy and Joel, David, Tom. The path of least resistance. That is,
you know,
it
was
path.
One of the first articles I ever wrote was about the path of least resistance.
Was it really? Yeah.
Yeah, it was about in nature, water,
mm-hmm.
electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Like these things all follow the path of least resistance.
They do. We were
and
talking.
It's important.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, finish your thought.
Well, it's important that we recognize that is the natural flow of everything in the world is to take the path of least resistance, except for us.
Well, that's where I was going to go with it. Yeah.
We push.
We do all this stuff. You and I were talking yesterday about how interesting it is that we focus on things like paths of least resistance. We focus on things like flowing downstream. But then the moment we try to figure out how to get ourselves to a better high-feeling place, it's always a reach. It's always effort to get there,
mm-hmm.
which is the direct opposite of what the message is.
So, you know, I caught myself saying that this morning, just a minute ago, saying reaching for the better-feeling thought. I think I want to start, I want to change my language around that and just say, allow it, allow the better feeling thought to flow in because it's there already.
Mm. Yeah, just letting it happen. Letting
just
it be there.
Let it in.
Yep, let it in.
So here's an example of
can I stay on that topic for just a second?
Sure.
This whole thing about allowing, and we've been doing an entire section of the book on allowing. And one of the things that I think made it a little difficult for me to understand how allowing works, how to allow, when to allow, how to know what to allow, how to know when I have a resistance and let go of it. How to let go of it. What do you do? First, it's like I used to say very early on, where's the off switch? Just show me on my chest where the off switch is. I'll turn it off and there won't be any more resistance, right? But I could never find the off switch. I know more now about why I had trouble finding that off switch. And I have to say, I usually don't criticize Abraham books or any of these other books, but this is one criticism I have of the book. A large chunk of this section on allowing is about all the different ways we don't allow.
Mm.
There's a lot of focus on that. There's not a whole lot by comparison. There is quite a bit, but by comparison, there's not as much focus on the actual allowing part. It's more about noticing all the different ways we don't allow. And that's good. It's good to notice how we don't allow, but like we were just saying a moment ago, we don't want to live there.
So that sounds like you're focusing on resistance.
Exactly. Exactly. Resistance, boy, I have become more and more in admiration. I know this is a weird thing to say. In admiration of just how well we hold on to resistance without even knowing that we hold on to resistance. It's just incredible how well we do it.
If you are resisting, you're not allowing.
That's right. There it is in a nutshell.
I mean, you're either doing one or the other.
Now, Wendy likes to point out that she doesn't even look for resistance. What she does is she just goes through life, and when resistance appears to her, then she does things to move it out of the way, which is a great way of looking at, you know, how you're going to deal with all this and how you're going to move forward. And I'm still trying to incorporate that into my own thinking. I still find myself, though, wondering, is there anything I can be doing to root out more resistances? And she deters me from that like crazy. And I understand why. But nevertheless, there's so much in there. It's like, I got to find a way to get it out, you know?
Well, I think that, you know, here's a tip. And that is just, we talked about it. I can't remember if it was yesterday or last week, but talking about what resistance feels like in the body.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were talking about clenching your teeth or having a tight jaw. And I was talking about, I really feel it in my shoulders and my neck and in my solar plexus. When we sharpen our awareness of recognizing that, like earlier, like, I don't know about you, if you've ever been a person that had like headaches, but I have, and sometimes I'll be so busy and doing whatever, and I'm not even really realizing it. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh wow, I've had this headache all morning. Like, and I haven't done anything about it. Now that doesn't generally happen now, but I've had that experience, you know, in the past. And I recognize that those kind of things happen when we're not really in tune with our body and our emotions. Our emotions live in our body. Like, we feel them, right? Yeah. We feel them through the instrument of our body. Mm-hmm. And so if we can sharpen our awareness so that we recognize resistance when it's subtle, not when it's a full on, like, you know, every muscle is clenched, but when we recognize it, breathing, we can let go of some of that resistance just with breathing.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I like that. One of the things that frustrated me early on was all these daily practices people wanted me to do. They wanted me to meditate. They wanted me to do affirmations. They wanted me to do all these things.
Right.
And early on, I thought to myself, that's just a waste of time. What's that going
to be? It's like, that's a full-time job.
It's a full-time job, and I'll never get it done. I mean, Abraham says so. You'll never get it done.
Right.
So it just seemed futile to me. I actually put it off for the longest time doing any of that. And then, as you know, I did the mirror work over, you know, starting like last February, and that made a difference. And there are other things that I've done on a habitual basis that made a difference. And yet there was always that little piece of me that just felt, here it is again, a little bit of resistance to that approach. And I think your explanation a moment ago just explained why. Because yes, it's good to establish a habit that changes an old habit, that establishes a new habit about relaxing through meditation, that about focusing on good things instead of focusing on bad things. Establishing new habits are good. But I think it's also even more important to do it in context. That's why I don't like the arbitrariness of just doing it once a day, and to start the day or at the end of the day or whatever. Because I just feel better about doing it at the moment that I'm experiencing whatever it is that I don't like. And I like the way you said it, that essentially it's noticing what's going on, noticing the signals. And Wendy talks about that too. Noticing the signals, noticing that, I mean, even as I was talking about that, my jaw started to clench. I could feel the tightness in my jaw.
Mm-hmm.
As I was talking about that, a moment ago about being frustrated by, well, geez, you know, why is it that I'm not getting there? Why is it that, we have to do this on like a planned schedule? Why can't I just experience it? Just that alone made me feel clenching in my jaw. And I understand that clenching is related to stress. And I understand that stress is related to not breathing well enough. Oh, okay. Well, now I know what to do. I'm in this moment right now noticing this thing. So now I don't have to like plan this for tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Right now, I can just take a breath. And take another breath. And now I'm dealing with it right now. I'm not waiting. You know? I like that a lot better.
Perfect. No, I mean, I think that's it. Is the recognition that our bodies are telling us what the deal is all the time. When our jaw is clenched, we're not in alignment. And we can deal with it just as quick as you just did.
Yeah.
A couple deep breaths. And see, that's a really subtle thing. That's not... You know, I've been clenching my jaw for 3 days solid and I've got a migraine headache now and I'm, you know, and my fists are clenched and it's like, we don't have to get to that point. We can notice it when it's subtle and take care of it then. And that's like this little mini pivot that can happen consistently until we're just pretty much staying in alignment. It's like that idea we talked about driving the car down the road. You might not notice it, but to keep your car on the road in your own lane, you are making little mini micro adjustments constantly.
And they're so much easier than the big adjustments that come from not paying attention.
Right.
Right?
Like when you have to, whoa, what just happened? Swerving back. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's a great analogy. So that's what we want to be able to do, is to be so aware that when our body gives us a little hint, we feel an emotion, we can align ourselves in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really it right there. It's not just waiting for stuff to show up. That was the part that bothered me. It wasn't about waiting. It was about what I'm going to do when it shows up. That's what resonates with me. What am I going to do about it? First of all, am I going to notice it? And yes, I'm willing to notice it. I'm willing to notice anything that is resistant in me because I want to get rid of it all. I want to remove that resistance. I want to replace it with feeling good. So I'm willing to notice it. And then when it happens, I'm willing to do something about it. I'm willing to just do whatever it takes to reverse it. I'm willing to take whatever action I need to take, whatever emotional shift I need to take. I'm willing to change whatever thought I need to take to shift to. I'm willing to do whatever it takes right then, right now.
Here's the thing is when you get really good at it because you've been practicing, it's so easy peasy.
Mm.
You're doing it right now in the moment without really even it doesn't take effort. It's just alignment, right? And it's like,
well, that's just
it's like that micro movement. It's just pretty easy at that point.
And now that's I've got a way to congratulate myself because I have been doing it. I just haven't given myself enough credit for it. I've been doing it all along. Everybody does it all along.
Yeah.
We go, the only time that we're not doing it is when we're allowing ourselves to get angrier and angrier or more frustrated or more depressed on an ongoing basis until we get really, really angry and really, really depressed. That's the only time we're not doing it. The rest of the time, we're modulating. The rest of the time, we're making those little micro adjustments. Congratulations to us. Hooray.
We're awesome.
We're doing it.
So this is going to, I'm just looking at where we're at and realizing we're going to end today on a really positive high. Because the next part that I'm going to read is basically Jerry's example, or Abraham's example, I should say, of an old story about well-being and then a new story. And this always feels like one of those rampages of appreciation, right?
I always love those. So yeah, go for it.
So the old story, I'm probably going to like be, oh my gosh, it sounds just like something I've said. The old story, I'm noticing symptoms in my body that worry me. As I get older, I feel less strong, less stable, less healthy, less secure. I worry about where I'm headed health-wise. I've tried to take care of myself, but I don't see that it's helped me that much. I guess it's just normal to feel worse as time goes on. I saw that with my parents, so I'm really worried about my health. I think that's a story a lot of people will feel familiar when they hear, right?
Yeah.
But here's the example of a new story. My body responds to my thoughts about it and to my thoughts about everything I think about. The better my thoughts feel when I think them, the more I allow my own personal well-being. I like knowing that there's an absolute correlation between how I feel and what my chronic thoughts have been and how those thoughts felt as I thought them. I like knowing that those feelings are meant to help me choose better feeling thoughts, which produce better feeling vibrations, which will produce a better feeling body. My body is so responsive to my thoughts, and that's such a good thing to know. I'm getting rather good at choosing my thoughts. No matter what condition I find myself in, I have the power to change it. My state of physical health is simply an indication of the state of my chronic thoughts. I have control of both. A physical body is an amazing thing in the way it began as a glob of fetal cells to become this full-blown human body. I'm impressed with the stability of the human body and the intelligence of the cells that make up the human body as I notice how my body accomplishes so many important functions without my conscious involvement. I like that it's not my conscious responsibility to move the blood through my veins or the air through my lungs. I like that my body knows how to do that and does it so well. The human body in general is quite an amazing thing. An intelligent, flexible, durable, resilient, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching thing. My own body serves me very well. I love my exploration of life through my physical body. I enjoy my stamina and flexibility. I like living life in my body. I'm so pleased with my eyes that look out into this world, seeing near and far from where I stand, distinguishing shapes and colors with such vivid perception of depth and distance. I so enjoy my body's ability to hear and smell and taste and feel. I love the tactile, sensual content of this planet and my life in my wonderful body. I feel appreciation and fascination for my body's self-patching ability as I watch wounds cover over with new skin and as I discover renewed resiliency when traumas to my body occur. I'm so aware of my body's flexibility, my fingers' dexterity, and the immediate response that my muscles show to any task I attempt. I like understanding that my body knows how to be well and is always moving towards wellness, and that as I do not get in the way of that with negative thought, wellness must prevail. I like understanding the value of my emotions, and I understand that I have the ability to achieve and maintain physical well-being because I have the ability to find and maintain happy thoughts. On any day in this world, even when some things in my body may not be at their best, I am ever aware that far, far, far more things are functioning as they should, and that the aspects of well-being of my body are dominant. And most of all, I love my body's quick response to my attention and intentions. I love understanding my mind-body-spirit connections and the powerful, productive qualities of my deliberate alignment. I love living life in my body. I feel such appreciation for this experience. I feel good. How's that for the wind-up?
That's fantastic. That's a great way to wind things up for the day. Absolutely brilliant. You couldn't have done it better. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I guess we'll have to end on that note because we're out of time. But we'll see you next week, Cindy. We don't see you till next Tuesday, but we'll talk to you then.
I'll be back next week. Have a great weekend, everyone.
And we invite you all back next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.